Hello, everyone. Well, I guess we don't have to talk about it, but I think it's a good thing to talk about because it is a serious issue. Hello, everyone. My name is Brandon, and I have Amanda and Lois. Hello,
panelists. Hi, Brandon. It's good to be back.
Yeah, great
we
to have you.
We're going to liven this up today.
That's right. Great to have you back. Liven it up because the bees are dying off,
that's
but we
right.
don't have to be depressed about it, right? But we can hopefully do something about it.
We're going to bring back the bees.
Yes, that's right. Yesterday, actually, we talked a lot about how farmers and researchers, they're trying to save the dying honeybees. And we talked about the bleak future, right? And so could you just review one or two points for us? We'll start with you, Amanda.
Okay. Just yesterday, we talked about how modern farm economics have created this system of genetically engineered food, which relies on chemicals. But unfortunately, those chemicals are the ones that possibly are killing off the bees. And we'll look more into that. Is that true or is that not true?
Okay. Lois, anything from yesterday?
Well, I think for myself, I learned that bees were way more migrant than I ever thought they were.
Mm.
And I think it's quite interesting that that our very first two paragraphs talked about, I have see his last name here, Ellis, and going to being in Minnesota and taking his bees to California. And that is just, I don't know, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
It
yeah.
was a real lesson to me, and I'm sure our readers will go, really? And it just tells you how important bees really are to the whole natural nature system. Mm-hmm. And we better be thinking about it. Even if we think they're insignificant, they certainly aren't.
And we also talked about the agriculture, the chemically dependent agriculture yesterday, and we talked about how the bees, the domesticated bees, deliver a third of the food on our plate. And that's a big statement, really. A third of our food on our plates comes from, as a result of the bees doing what they do. They pollinate the plants. And so if we have fewer bees, then we might not have the food that we want to eat. So we learned a lot yesterday, and if you weren't able to join us, please go back and take a look at what's in the article on page 18. But today we're moving on to the next page, page 19, to continue talking about this subject of nature's dying migrant worker. And just once again, what is a migrant worker?
Okay, that's one of our specialized terms. And a migrant worker is someone who moves from one region to another in order to find work. So, for example, if there's no work in your own city or country, you will move to another area so that you have an income for your family.
And, of course, here we're talking about bees. They're not receiving an income, but they're like a migrant worker because they are moving from place to place. Maybe they go up to the northeastern part of the U.S. and then to the western part of the U.S. eventually, so they're moving around. Well, let's go ahead and get into our first reading for today. Open up your magazines if you have them there with you, or if you have your smartphone or tablet there with you, you can take a look at page 19. We'll have our first reading.
Most consumers are insulated from the threat. As long as the aisles of America's grocery stores are resplendent with apples, lemons, coffee, cocoa, peanuts, grapes, onions, cucumbers, and watermelons. But not Ellis and his sometimes partner, Jeff Anderson, a third-generation beekeeper from Minnesota. For them, catastrophe could be just one harvest away. This winter, Ellis lost about 1,200 of the 2,200 hives he had in the summer. Last winter, Anderson lost 65% of his 3,000 hives. For the first time, they are thinking that perhaps the foraging grounds in central Minnesota have become too barren and toxic for their bees.
So we start out here with most consumers are insulated from the threat. What does insulated mean?
Insulated means that you are protected from, or you only know about the inside of something. You may not know about the outside. For example, a house can be insulated against the cold.
Mm-hmm.
We usually put something between the walls to make sure that cold doesn't come into the house, mm-hmm. and the warmth stays with inside.
We might also think of it as a piece of clothing, an insulated coat.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a warm lining inside,
right,
to keep you away from your body, away from the elements outside.
That's right. And here in this context, we're really, of course, talking about it protecting. You're protected from the threat. As long as the aisles of America's grocery stores are resplendent with all of these things. I like that word, resplendent.
I do. It's definitely a nice word. It's in our vocabulary focus, of course. It says here that it's beautiful and seeming to shine. I often think of it for a woman's long hair or a girl's long hair or jewelry or diamonds.
Yeah, that's right. Our food, right?
Now food here.
I like that because food can be beautiful.
As we go on, and it talks about the different foods or produce, that when you go into the supermarket, it really does look shiny.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. You know, when I go back to the United States, you know, we like to eat there. If you didn't know that, travel there. You will see that many people like to eat, but you know, it's a bit different from the stores here in Asia because we eat some different things and we like to eat a lot of ice cream, for example. So I remember walking into the ice cream aisle and just, wow, tons of ice cream. And you could use this word resplendent. It's just, oh, yeah. Your mouth just drops open. You're like, whoa, that's a lot of ice cream.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we have all of these foods and can you take us through the list, Lois?
Yes, I certainly will. We have apples, lemons, coffee, cocoa, peanuts, grapes, onions, cucumbers, and watermelons. And if you're not hungry now, you must have had a really good breakfast because this is making me hungry.
And one word sticks out there for me, the word coffee.
Yes.
Please don't mess with the coffee.
Well, for me, it's cocoa. Please don't mess with my chocolate.
That's right. So maybe there's something that jumps out there to you. Well, hopefully that gets your attention because bees, you know, have an effect on all of this, right, Amanda?
That's right. They are part of the process of producing them. And we see that most consumers are insulated from the threat of the loss of bees. Mm-hmm. But we go on in the next sentence to see that Alice, that is Steve Alice from yesterday, he is a bee farmer, and his sometimes partner, Jeff Anderson, a third generation beekeeper from Minnesota, are not insulated from the threat.
Yeah, they are on the front lines, right?
That's right, they are. And it also says they're third generation beekeepers from Minnesota. So they've been doing this a long time, and they've been hearing a lot of stories from the generations above them in their family, too.
Mm-hmm.
And when somebody is a sometimes something here, Jeff Anderson is Steve Ellis's sometimes partner. It means that on certain things, perhaps, or at a certain part of the business, Jeff is his partner in business, but perhaps he's not completely his partner in business.
Right. Maybe not all the time. Right.
Right.
Okay. So for them, these two guys, Jeff and Steve, this is a catastrophe or a potential catastrophe. Wow, when you hear that word, you kind of listen very closely, right?
Catastrophe means a bad situation. We'll often hear of a catastrophic storm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the root word is actually catastrophe.
Okay, so catastrophe could be just one harvest away. Well, that sounds very dramatic. And by the way, you know, as we're going through this article, you might think, oh, wow, this is a huge problem. It is a huge problem, but we don't have to be, you know, full of fear. We don't want to be over dramatic, but we are trying to, you know, raise awareness here. This article is trying to raise awareness, rather.
Mm-hmm.
So catastrophe could be just one harvest away.
Right. And I think they're thinking that this is a possibility because we see in the next paragraph that this winter, Steve Ellis, he lost about 1,200 of the 2,200 hives that he had in the summer. That is a huge loss.
Yes, it is a huge loss.
Oh, my goodness.
And then we see that Last winter, Anderson lost 65%. 65% of his 3,000 hives.
Well, yeah, and if we're doing our math, Steve Ellis actually lost more than 50%. So this is reason for people calling it a catastrophe or reason for true concern.
Right. Mm-hmm. We can talk about all the different things, but when you see these statistics, it puts things in perspective.
Exactly. And you know, I was doing a little research, Brandon, as you know, on my own, and the most populous province in Canada had a really bad bee situation this past winter, well, the winter before, but 2013, 2014, and they lost a total of 58%. And they're trying to get to the bottom of it because it's so concerning, because that there's two bread baskets in Canada, central southern Ontario and then out in British Columbia. So they need to get this solved. And that's what we're trying to do in this article to them, explaining to us, bringing it to light, and how are we going to solve this.
That's right, Lois. And so for the first time, these men, they're thinking that perhaps, just perhaps, the foraging grounds in central Minnesota have become too barren and toxic for their bees. And so when we see that word foraging, you're searching for something, right? And we're talking about the foraging grounds here. And so, you know, they're growing crops and things there, and the bees go there searching for pollen. But it's very barren. They don't have what they need, right? And so that's one problem. And the other one is that it's toxic. It's poisonous. And so you have really two different things going on here.
Exactly. When I saw the word barren there, they don't usually use that word unless it means there's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
And toxic, well, we all hear that word so much because we're thinking about our water and our air and that sort of thing. And this is the ground that grows what we need.
Right. And so this is cause for concern, of course. And as we move into our next reading, we see that there are some disastrous changes.
Disastrous changes. Minnesota has long been one of the top five honey-producing states in the country. But in the space of a few decades, the central Minnesota landscape around Ellis has been transformed into one that has no room for bees. The widespread use of herbicides has virtually wiped out the milkweed, clover, and wildflowers from Minnesota's vast farming regions. For bees, which need 150 million flowers to make enough honey for one hive to survive the winter, there isn't much left to eat.
All right, so we have this word disastrous, and that's a very negative word, of course. If there's a disaster, everything is destroyed, right? And so these are some changes that are coming about that are causing a lot of harm to the bees. So we talk next about Minnesota. Minnesota has long been one of the top five honey-producing states in the country. And so there are a lot of bees there. There's a lot of honey produced there, but things have changed.
Right. It says, but in the space of a few decades, so maybe we're talking two or three here, the central Minnesota landscape around Ellis has become transformed into one that has no room for bees.
Okay. And so there is no room for the bees, meaning that maybe there are no flowers there. There aren't the plants there that they need, and so that is causing one of the reasons for the decline in the number of bees.
Right, and you know what, to me it just says there's no place for the bees to visit.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's nothing flowering, I mean, the bees aren't going to stay in the flower, but they need to visit the flowers.
That's right.
And the blossoms.
Okay, and then next we talk about the widespread use of herbicides. Now, a herbicide is a chemical that is used to destroy plants, especially weeds. We already talked about pesticides, which is a chemical substance used to kill harmful insects or unwanted organisms. So that's just a little bit of the difference between those two terms. So there is a widespread use of herbicides. And what has it done?
It has virtually wiped out the milkweed, clover, and wild flowers. So the herbicide is meant to kill off the plants that would be considered a pest to the cash crop, but it is also killing off our wild flowers, the clover, and the milkweed, which the bees will usually use to pollinate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so that is a big issue, and we see that these are in Minnesota's vast farming regions, these clovers and the milkweed and the wildflowers. And vast just meaning it's a large space, extremely large. So this next statement is stunning to me, Lois, when we talk about these 150 million flowers.
Right. It says for bees which require 150 million flowers to make enough honey for one hive to survive the winter, there isn't much left to eat. Now, we got to put in that 150 million flowers, honey for one hive.
Right.
The connection there is astounding.
Right. And that's just to survive the winter, right? They have to do that all over again the next winter and all of that. So there's a lot going on there. 150 million flowers. So if you don't have any, well, then that's a big problem.
Yes. Right? You're not going to be, obviously, you're not going to be a honey producing state anymore.
And it's not just that, even if you have a few flowers, it's not enough, right? If you need 150 million and you have just a few, it's not going to be enough. And so you need a lot of flowers in order for the bees to produce enough honey to survive the winter.
It's interesting. At home, I'm seeing more and more municipalities pushing people not to actually have lawns, to actually have like little plants and wildflowers and things that bees can come to. And that is getting pushed in a lot of communities in Ontario, and actually in a lot of the big cities. And I'm thinking, now I know why. Maybe this is possibly part of it. This is, people are getting hugely concerned.
Right, yes. Well, we have more to learn today. We are going to have our last reading there on page 19 in the second column.
What flowers remain are increasingly exposed to a new family of insecticides that, along with corn and soybeans, have exploded across the Midwest and the world. Neonicotinoids. They come coated on virtually every seed planted in every major crop across the country. Sunflowers, canola, cotton, soybeans, and corn. Each spring when farmers take to the fields, some unknown quantity of the chemical escapes into the environment, especially in corn country. Insecticides blow in the wind toward the hive. Farmers have to use a talc to keep the seeds from sticking together, and as the air pressure in the machines forces the seeds into the ground, the contaminated powder escapes and drifts over the land.
And then we move on to another problem here. What flowers remain are increasingly exposed to a new family of insecticides. Now, an insecticide is a chemical substance for killing insects. So we've talked about pesticides, herbicides, and now we are talking about insecticides. And so this is an additional problem. The flowers that remain, they are exposed to this. If you're exposed to something, what does that mean?
It means that you are not protected against it.
Okay, and so now we're really talking about this chemical or insecticide called neonicotinoids. And that's a long word. It's difficult to say. You may never say it again.
But I want to keep it for Scrabble. That's what I want to do. That word is awesome.
Right, but it is causing potential problems, right? And it's a type of insecticide that is chemically similar to nicotine. Now, when you hear the word nicotine, what do you think of?
Well, I think of cigarettes, and I think negative.
Right. Okay. And so it's similar to nicotine, and is used to prevent parasites from feeding on plants. And what do we learn about them next?
That they come coated on virtually every seed planted in every major crop across the country.
All right, and then we get a list here of different things, the sunflowers, canola, cotton, soybeans, and corn. And so, they're using this chemical here with these plants, and this is cause for concern, right? It is helpful. It is killing off a lot of the insects that you don't want, but maybe some that you do want as well. And then we move on to each spring.
Right. It says that each spring when farmers take to the fields, some unknown quantity of the chemical escapes into the environment, especially in corn country. So we're ingesting this then.
All right. So it's an unknown quantity. That could be a key phrase, because if it's too much, that could be part of the problem. So an unknown quantity of the chemical escapes into the environment.
And we said when farmers take to the fields, it means when the farmers start planting the seed for the new crop that they're going to do. So take to the fields means go into the fields.
That's right. Okay. So some of that is being released, and they need to know exactly how much is being released, because if it's too much, that could be a big part of the problem. So insecticides, they blow in the wind toward the hive. And of course, though there are poisonous things in it, toxins in it that could harm the bees. And if they're blown into the hive, that's a big problem.
Exactly. And we also see here, and we're reading here, that farmers have to use a talc. And that's in our vocabulary focus. A talc is, we often think of that as talcum powder, but it is a powder often used on the face as a paper coating or as a filler for paint and plastics. But here we've got a different talc they're talking about to keep the seeds from sticking together. And as the air pressure in the machines forces the seeds into the ground, the contaminated powder escapes and drifts over the land.
So again, we're seeing that there are toxins here. This is poisonous, possibly, for the bees.
Right.
So all of this really boils down to chemicals being used.
Mm-hmm.
And the bees are possibly being negatively affected by these chemicals.
Right.
Don't be, you know, afraid of all the big words, you know. Just know that there are some contaminations there, and it could be causing problems. And we see this where it drifts over the land. It moves slowly over the land, and of course the bees can pick that up, or can go into their hives or whatever, and cause lots of problems. Now at the bottom there we have a sidebar, and it's entitled Super Bee. So we learn here more about the bee and what it is like. So bees have evolved, right, with human help, and they have extraordinary powers, Amanda.
Yeah, they have extraordinary powers of navigation and communication. So they know how to fly, and they know how to communicate well with each other.
That's right. And that's amazing. It's really interesting to look at insects or animals and see how smart they are.
Oh,
really,
I know.
And how they have this innate ability to do things.
And that they can fly a 5-mile stretch was just amazing to me. I had no idea.
I didn't either. So this is news to me. And it says it's much farther than most wild pollinators. They use the sun and an extraordinary innate sense of direction to find their way home after long foraging expeditions.
And innate just means that they have a inside them, that it just, they know how to do it from within themselves. So they know how to go in the different directions and to find their way home after they've been looking for food.
Okay.
And they really are an extraordinary insect when we find out all this information about them.
Yeah, that's right. And they even have a dance.
Yeah.
Intricate. So if something is intricate, it has lots of details involved that may be quite complex. And so they have a waggle dance, and they tell others in the hive where the flowers are. That's how they communicate.
Yeah.
Did you know that, panelists?
That's called, like, incredible body language, I guess.
Or charades.
Yeah, yeah,
body language. Or charades, body language. They get their wings involved, not their hands.
By the way, listeners, charades is a game where you are trying to tell the player the word that you have, but you are not allowed to use words. You can only use body language.
That's right. And we also see that bees are portable. Beekeepers can just pick up the hives and traverse the country. Traverse meaning that they're moving around or traveling around. They're moving them from one vast field to another. And we already talked about that in this article. We talked about how they're in Minnesota and then they are going to California, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this is news to me, but kind of explains now why a beekeeper who lived right beside my grandfather's farm, why the hives seem to be there at one time of the year and another time of the year they weren't there. So this explains a little bit of that to me.
Right. So altogether, these features make honeybees the perfect super pollinator for modern agriculture. That's, you know, why we depend upon them so much and we need them so much because for the plants and so forth. That's why they're so important to the plants, so we have the vegetables and the fruit that we want to eat. And so we have one more day to talk about this very important subject, nature's dying migrant worker. We will finish up our nature article tomorrow, so please come back and join us then. Until then, this is Brandon,
Lois,
and Amanda
saying goodbye.
Goodbye.